led, and that's led to actually, I was a student at Durham. That was my first university. Then I was a school teacher for a couple of years, and I went and did my theology degree down in London. And since then, I've had pastoral ministry in Manchester, Oxfordshire, Oxford itself, and moved up here in our retirement 4.5 years ago to work with Martin and Linda Dunkley, who lead our regional group of churches, and to just to work with them and help them in our semi-retirement. And we just try and get stuck in with whatever we can, don't we?
Yeah, just do bits and bobs here and there.
Try and encourage people, try and teach a bit. Yeah, the last 18 months was a bit rough for us. Our daughter in the USA had breast cancer twice, two different types, completely different, unrelated types of breast cancer in the same breast. Went through major surgery, and we got over there when we could. Our little American grandson was rushed into hospital with a burst appendix, or about to burst appendix, and then had complications. Then Liz had breast cancer last year. I had shingles, and it was one of those 18 months when you think, well, I'll be glad when those 18 months are over. So here we are.
Yeah,
I'm still standing, as Elton John sings. Do you know, with God, we can still be standing, can't we? You know, I know some of you guys well enough to know you've had your rough patches in life as well. And being a Christian doesn't exempt us, does it? Doesn't put us in a bubble that says, you know, we're excluded from any physical health problems or family problems or mental health problems. We get them like anybody else does. It's part of living in a fallen world. But we have Jesus with us, walking through that with us. And it is better to walk through them with him than without him, isn't it? Amen? Thumbs up? Yeah, good. That's it. When you're on mute, thumbs up will do. That's good. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, so you want me to say something?
Yeah.
it has been a tough year last year. And I think it's true to say we had to fight for our faith and to trust God through it all at various times, not knowing what the outcomes are going to be. But things are looking better, I think, all round. So, we're just grateful to God that we are still standing. And for me, it's been a real delight to join with the Buddy Cups group and just to get to know some of them and be involved in some of the things that they are doing. So, yeah, that's been a real joy, and the support, a real support and help over the last year. Yeah, it's about a year ago that I joined, I think. Yeah, before I knew about my own diagnosis. So, yeah, it's been quite a walk, but God is faithful and he's kept us going through it all. So we're really grateful to him. And to you, Buddy Cups.
Actually, in a funny sort of way, Liz did rather well out of the breast cancer, because when she got ill, you go through all the questions, both of you. Where's this going? What's going to be the outcome? Trying to get hold of scripture to stand on, which I felt God gave me, and started praying. And then I was praying for her one day, and we'd had her car was starting to have some troubles that needed money spending on it. And one day I was praying and I felt God say, well, do you believe Liz is going to come through this? And I said, yeah, I'm believing you, Lord. You've given me that word. I'm fighting for this now. And then I felt God say, well, in that case, she's going to need a new car for when she's come through it. I really felt like, you know, I felt like that was God. He was saying, are you prepared to put your money where your mouth is? So while she was still in the process of getting the surgery, I don't think she'd had the surgery yet, had you?
No.
We went out and bought her a brand new car as my declaration of faith that she would need this. So,
yeah, haven't been many miles on it yet, though.
Yeah, it's brand new, and she's only done 645 miles. But then that's probably all of, that all of us have done, haven't we? Right. Okay, you're going to move out the way.
I'm gonna go.
And Good. Okay, so we're going to come to the Psalms, but before we come to the Psalms, I thought I'd start with comedians. Wonder who your favourite comedian is. Well, my absolute favourite comedian at the moment is Michael McIntyre. Don't know any other fans there. The reason I love Michael McIntyre is because he is not the traditional comedian of, you know, like telling jokes one after the other. He just sort of witters on about life, doesn't he, any of you who know him? And he tells stories, stories of, you know, the frantic nature of trying to get your kids ready for school in the morning or fighting with a supermarket trolley. And the thing about it is, you know, that his stories are so impacting because you start laughing at what he's telling you and then you realise that this is you. You know, that you are doing this, that you, yeah, I fought with a supermarket trolley and not being able to get it out from the one that's stuck in front of it. Or, you know, yeah, I've had those arguments with the kids first thing in the morning before they go off to school or whatever it might be. Of a different generation, you know, there have been others like him. But he's one of my favourites because of this storytelling. And I think there's something about telling stories that connects with the human psyche, which of course is why Jesus told stories. They connected, people could identify with it. And it's why Israel used to tell stories, particularly the story of their encounters with God, because there were ways of connecting with people. And today we're looking in this series that you're doing at looking at different types of psalms. Today we're looking at psalms that tell stories. Now they've got a rather grand name amongst theologians. They're called salvation history psalms. But all that means is psalms that tell the history of how God saved us. And sometimes those salvation history psalms are at an individual level, what God did for me. But more often than not in the book of Psalms, they're stories of what God did for us as his people as a whole. And there are absolutely loads of them in the book of Psalms. Here's a few examples. Psalm 66, 105, 106. Psalms 113 to 118 are one whole block of salvation history psalms that to this day are still sung on Passover night by Jews. Psalm 135, 136. But, oh, and by the way, some salvation history psalms aren't even in the book of Psalms. So you get the song of Moses and Miriam after the crossing of the Red Sea in Exodus 15, because there are psalms, songs all throughout the scriptures. And one of the consistent features of all these kind of psalms is they look back over history to tell the story of what God did for two reasons. First, so God's people don't forget. And second, so God's people aren't fearful. Don't forget. Don't be fearful. Don't forget and so become ungrateful. Don't be fearful as you face the challenge that lies ahead of you. Why? Well, come on. Remember what God's done before for us. And if he's done it before, he can do it again. And that's really the essence of all these telling the story psalms, salvation history psalms. Come on, let's remember God did it before, so God can do it again. So we're going to look at part of one of those psalms, today, after that little introduction, it's Psalm 78 is the one that I've chosen. And I chose this one because it focuses in particular on why it's important to both know and tell our story, both our personal story and our corporate story as God's people. So we're only going to read part of it because it's a very long psalm. Why is it very long? Because when you start telling what God has done, it's a very long story. I think all of you can probably tell us that. You know, some of us have lived longer than others, so our story might be a bit longer. But once you start telling of what God did, it reminds you, and you think, oh yeah, and that reminds me of this and this and this. So we're going to read a few of these verses together. And as we read, we're going to be looking today at, there are two things that stand out in this psalm. The first is the call to tell the story. Tell the story. And that's verses 1 to 11 of Psalm 78. So we'll read that now. I'm reading from the latest NIV version. My people, hear my teaching. Listen to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth with a parable. I will utter things from of old, things we have heard and known, things our ancestors have told us. We will not hide them from their descendants. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our ancestors to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. They would not be like their ancestors, a stubborn and rebellious generation whose hearts were not loyal to God, whose spirits were not faithful to him. The men of Ephraim, though armed with bows, turned back on the day of battle. They did not keep God's covenant and refused to live by his law. They forgot what he had done, the wonders he had shown them. Okay, so my first point today is tell the story. Why? Why is it important to tell the story? Two reasons we're given in those verses. First, tell the story for the good of the next generation. That's verses 1 to 7. Tell the story for the good of the next generation. Putting it simply, if we don't tell them, they won't know it. I never cease to be amazed these days at quiz shows on TV where they will often ask the most simple of Bible questions, like, what was the name of the first man in the Bible? And people say, Jesus. Why? Because no one's told them the story. Now, you know, when I was growing up, you got told the story. Actually, you got religious studies in school even, and it was good old Bible stuff. You went to Sunday school, even if you dropped off later. But if we don't tell the story of God, of what he's done, of Jesus, then people won't know. And so verse 4 said, we will not hide them, the stories, from their descendants. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders he has done. And this whole section underlines the importance of what is often called generational transfer, passing on the story through the generations. Now, I don't know if you noticed in verses 5 and 6 how many generations the psalmist was thinking of there. Just take a look at verses 5 and 6 for me. Right, how many generations does he mention there? Let's have a look. We can do it by holding up fingers. I'm going to look for some answers. How many generations are mentioned in verses 5 and 6? Donna's got 3. Oh, Sue's got 5. Michelle's got 3. Others still looking. Okay, well, I've got 5. Our ancestors, their children, the next generation, children yet to be born, their children. There it is in the Christian Basics Bible. What an excellent Bible that is. 5 generations of passing on the story there. And what this psalm underlines is the importance of not passing it on for passing on's sake. The purpose in verse 7 is so that then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. 3 elements there of the purpose. First, personal trust. They put their trust in God. That's why we tell the story, because we want people for themselves to put their trust in God. Personal trust. Second, informed thinking. They would not forget his deeds. And the point of personal trust and informed thinking is that it leads to the third thing, obedient hearts, that they will keep his commands. We don't want people to know the stories of the Bible and the stories of Jesus just for the sake of it. We want them to know the stories and our experience of the story so that they can put their trust in this God and know him for themselves and be obedient to him and find the blessing of that. So tell the story for the good of the next generation. But here's the second part of that point. Tell the story, B, for the good of the present generation. Now, in verses 8 to 11 of those verses that I read, the author turns by contrast to what he calls a stubborn and rebellious generation whose hearts were not loyal to God, whose spirits were not faithful to him. Who's he thinking of there? Well, he's thinking, as the following verses make clear, of the breakaway northern kingdom, Israel, or Ephraim, as it's called here. Now, some of you will perhaps remember that after the death of King Solomon, the 10 northern tribes of Israel came to Solomon's son and asked for relief from some of the burdens and taxes that had been put on them. And Solomon's son was very foolish and said, "Make it easier, I'm going to make it worse for you." And the 10 northern tribes broke away, never to come back together again, made a separate nation called Israel, as opposed to what became known as Judea in the south. So these were a bunch of people who didn't want to hear the story, or at least wanted to hear the story on their own terms, a story of their own making and their own shaping. So, yeah, we want to trust in Yahweh, the living God, but we want to mix in with the worship of Baal up here in the north as well. We want a little pick and mix religion. That is so dangerous, and actually it's characteristic of, sadly, what many Christians still want to do today, to say they trust in God, but really want to follow the culture and what the culture is saying about what is and isn't acceptable, creating God in their own terms, telling the story in their own terms. And so they break away, in verse 10, they refused to live by his laws. So we need to tell the story. We need to tell about God and what he's done and how good he is. Why? Well, certainly for the benefit of the next generations, plural, but also for the benefit of the present generation, because if not, they will at best create God in their own image, or at worst, reject him completely. And that's the sort of culture that all of us live in, I think, whatever nation we are based in this morning. By the way, just want to add one other thing before I move on briefly to the second point, which will lead us into our discussion. Verse 3 reminds us that telling the story involves us passing on things we have heard and known. Note the two aspects there. Heard and known. Or to put that a different way, second-hand and first-hand. Second-hand is what you've heard. There's nothing wrong with second-hand. Actually, we only have the stories of Jesus and his resurrection second-hand, don't we? You know, I'm looking around and I don't think any of us are old enough to have been there to have actually seen Jesus rose from the dead. We do rely on second-hand reports, faithful reports, we believe, but second-hand reports. But the reason we believe the second-hand reports is that we've also experienced first-hand this risen Jesus. And so it's our experience of him first-hand that makes us trust what we heard second-hand, what we've read in the story. So from that, I want to underline, it's not only important to tell people the story of God and what went wrong and how he had to plan and prepare for that plan through Israel in the Old Testament and brought it to a climax through Jesus in the New Testament, through his death and resurrection. That's the story that we need to tell. But we also need to be ready to tell them our story. What this God, what this Jesus has done for us, that will often be the point of connection. And so the story needs balancing also with our story, our experience. People need to know this works. That's one of the things these salvation history psalms underline. It's not just, oh, remember the good old days, remember what God did. It's remember what God did and add in your story, that people might know that this God is still doing these things. He still can be trusted, and we are still living these things out. So, tell the story is what these psalms are about. Here's my second point, and this is where I thought we might lead into discussion that I know we often do, but I'm perhaps tweaking it from how you'd normally do it, Jeremy and Sue. I hope this is okay. So my first point was tell the story. For the good of the next generation, for the good of the present generation, but make sure that story is not just generalized, it's also personalized with your own experience of it. Here's the second one. The second main point is know the story. Tell the story. Know the story. Now, you will notice that I stopped reading at verse 11 in this psalm. And that's because from verse 12 onwards, actually verse 12 to 72, he lists some of the key events of Israel's story from the Old Testament. And actually, it's not just linear. He'll go around the circle at least twice. Why? Because very few of us get it first time of hearing. Do remember, by the way, all these stories were told and all these psalms were written in days when people couldn't go and pick up their own copy of the Bible or go on the internet to find things. How did you learn things? By hearing. By hearing it again and again and again until it became part of you. So this psalm covers Israel's story at least twice. So here's what I thought we would do for part of our sort of discussion is from verse 12 onwards, what are some of the key events in Israel's story that are referred to in the verses that follow? Now, if you're a fairly new Christian, you might not know some of these. That's fine. Okay, But here's a chance to learn some of them. But some of you who've been around a few years should be able to recognize pretty quickly and say, ah, verse 12, that's this. Verse 13, that's that bit of the story. Are you with me? So we're going to look together for some of the key events of Israel's story. And then I've got a second part in a moment, if we've got time as well. So Jeremy and Sue, sort of over to you for whatever you do now, probably written during his reign or maybe shortly after it. So the importance of telling the story, and here in this second point, the importance of knowing the story. So here was my final thing. We're sort of running out of time, but I think we may be able to do this still. I'm looking at Jeremy and Sue. Yeah, they're giving me a thumbs up, and we'll do it briefly. You see, I said, not only is it important for us to tell the story and know the story, and for us, primarily, of course, that is the story of Jesus. You know, the truth is, for people in 21st century Britain or Thailand or Jamaica or Poland, they're probably not as interested in the story of Israel. But so we have to start probably with the story of Jesus. So for us, knowing that story and telling that story is the starting point. I'm not saying the others aren't important. It isn't. It's the starting point that is the story of Jesus. But I said earlier, it's not only important to know the story, but also to be able to know and tell our story, our encounter with Jesus. So important that each of us has our testimony at our fingertips. And that testimony, I almost feel like you need three versions of it. You need the 10-second version. You need the 60-second version. And you need the 5 to 10 minute version, depending on the level of interest and the opportunity you've got. And you need to have that at your fingertips, so that when the opportunity comes up, you're not left thinking, what shall I say? It's like you need to know the key points so you can tell that story. Sometimes you'll have longer to unpack it. And sometimes you'll get the opportunity, perhaps not just to share the gospel, but you might get the opportunity to tell a story of what Jesus has done for you. And again, as a way in. So telling the story and knowing your story is really important. It needs to be like your credit card in your handbag or your wallet. You can get it out at a moment's notice to tap and swipe and sow that seed and to have those different versions available. So maybe we could just do this to finish with. And it will have to be really brief. Let's do the 30-second version. If you had just 30 seconds to tell people your story, either of how you came to Christ and why, or 30 seconds to tell a story of something that Jesus has done for you over these past 12 months, what would it be? Okay, just think. 30 seconds, that's all you've got. You're sitting next to someone on the bus. This is when COVID's finished and you're allowed to do it. And you've not even got face masks on so you can understand their question. And they're getting off at the next bus stop in 30 seconds. And they've just said to you, either, so what is the story of Jesus? Or why did you become a Christian? Or so what's God done for you recently? And you've only got 30 seconds to tell them before they get off the bus. What would it be? Right. Either we can do it, stay together, Jeremy and Sue, and just pick two or three people who are prepared to do it. Or you can put us into rooms quickly I know we've just got over 12 o'clock now, so it's up to you entirely which we do at this point.
Okay, I'll just do the smaller groups. So the room should be ready.
30 seconds, guys.
Okay.
We'll time it.
So let's round up. Here we've got the Psalms we're looking at this week, the Michael McIntyre Psalms, the Salvation History Psalms, the Telling the Story Psalms. Look out for them when you're reading Psalms. They're all over the place. Mm. And the two key points we've looked at today, tell the story and know the story. Tell the story for the good of the next generation and for the good of this generation. Pass on the story. But you have to know the story. And for us particularly, the story of Jesus, what he has done, who he is, and what he has done for us, so that we have our personal story to add into the bigger story as a way of hooking people and drawing people in. Telling the Story Psalms, Michael McIntyre.